This episode of Pueblo's Podcast is presented by Montgomery & Stewart Funeral Directors.
Montgomery & Stewart Funeral Directors are proud to be independent, just like you. They're owned and operated by lifetime Puebloans, not by any of the giant funeral home chains. This means they only answer to the families they serve, not to outside stockholders. Your independence allows you to select which funeral home you will call at the time of need or when considering a pre-need plan. That same independence allows you to choose a local funeral home where you know your wishes will be followed to the letter. Since 1922, they've worked hard to make a positive difference in the Pueblo community by providing service and care for families of all faiths and ethnic origins. Please call them today. They never use high-pressure sales tactics and will be happy to answer your questions and discuss your options at your convenience at their funeral home or in the privacy of your home. Call Montgomery & Stewart Funeral Directors today. 719-542-1552. Montgomery & Stewart Funeral Directors in downtown Pueblo. I'm Dave Moore, and this is Pueblo's Podcast. My guest today is Darren Stewart, who's on the board of directors for The Impossible Players and also has done directing and acting and has been with The Impossible Players for 40-some years, you said?
Around 40-some years, yes.
Wow, that's terrific. Great to have you here. Give me just a little bit of background about you, Darren.
Oh, goodness. Been kind of all over the map. Spent 21 years at a small corporate manufacturing corporation here in town called Sangre Corporation. Became CEO there and then quit that, grew gray, and decided to do something different. Ended up at Tinseltown, of all places.
Huh.
Wanted to work there as a kid and went over there. Ended up there for 15 years working as the maintenance up in Springs, the south side one.
Oh, okay.
And from there, worked up at the park for a little bit, Pueblo Mountain Park or whatever it's called now.
Sure.
And let's see, work construction. And all along, all during that, I've never let go of the theater. Finally, and my love for it, and it is a passion, decided to take the leap of faith and create an acting school as well. I'd been teaching at Pueblo School for Arts and Science, the theater. I'd been working lots of different shows anyway. So I decided to take my weirdness of the way I teach theater and create a company called Ovation. And that's my primary
focus
right now is Ovation and the Impossible Players.
And at this recording, the Impossible Players just finished According to Rumor. Very cool. Give us a little bit of background on the Impossible Players. You said they started kind of being put together in the 60s, right?
Yeah. We're thinking it's around 1964. There are several stories, Dave. We'll go with this one. It was a group of business people here in town and lawyers and such. And it was the 60s. It was different times. There weren't digital stuff all in their faces. And they would sit around on Fridays or whenever and read scripts, just hang out, read scripts, kind of a bunch of nerds. And same thing we do now. And sure enough, they decided to try and produce a show. And they they went out and started asking people around town, you know, for money. They needed front money. And the people around them were saying, well, that's impossible. You can't do that here. You know, it's Pueblo, it's sports, it's that sort of thing. And sure enough, that's the story I choose to believe on the story of the Impossible Players. Bill Mattoon, the Kleins were involved, Matthews. I'm sure I'm missing some there, but they were kind of the founding fathers and mothers of the group.
Oh, very good. And it looks like the initial production was in 1966?
I believe so, yeah, as we were looking, yes. Yeah, and that was, what did you say it was, Dave? You actually looked it up. Yeah. My brain farted.
I looked it up. It was something to do with angels.
Yeah.
My Three Angels. And then they also did Critics' Choice and The Rainmaker in those 2 years.
I was really young back then.
Right, me too. And so over the years, the Impossible Players have done hundreds and hundreds of presentations and plays.
Yeah. We've laid it down pretty heavy. I guess when I can speak more to my time, I think something that we're all proud of is the length of time that the impossible players have been around. At one point, true or not true, the best that we could find was that we were the longest running community theater west of the Mississippi. Now, again, I'm not sure that's true, but that's what we could find back. Wow. I think it was in the 90s, and we're still bragging about it.
So, oh, sure. So. I'd go with that if I were you. Absolutely.
We'll just take that.
Yeah, definitely. And it involves community members, and you've been in productions. And absolutely. Can you mention any names from past productions of community folks from Pueblo or the area that we might go, oh, yeah, I know them.
Oh, goodness. Well, there is Meg Versteg, who's been around for a long time. The Mattoons, Rick Mattoon as well. He was a somewhat public figure here in town. I just look at them all as friends and actors. So
sure. And the Impossible Playhouse has been in several different locations over the years.
Yeah. It started, and I may screw this up, I think it started in a place over the old Cruz Beggs building down on Main, I believe.
Sure.
When I got involved, it was down on Oneida, and the Ottersbergs owned it back then in the Coors franchise here, which was always fun down there because you could do a show up in this theater that was made by Larry Bradley and, a bunch of the folks. Larry Bradley was a professor here in town of technical theater, excuse me. And did a lot with what would be SESC, is that right? And then USC. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Then when the program broke down there, Larry got lost in the world somewhere. I haven't seen him in forever. It moved to Oneida, like I said. And the Ottersburg had it. So what was fun in that case was that Ottersburg always had a showroom, a car showroom that was in the bottom of that building, that warehouse that we were in. And so after the shows, he would always break open that keg, and the audience and the cast would go down, and we would hang out in this bar that had these old, well-preserved cars.
Oh, nice.
And just sit around and have a party down there. So that was part of the fun of that over on Oneida Street.
Oh, very good.
From there, we moved to – we had to bump around a little bit, but then we fell into PCC, and we were there for several years. That's when I became much more engaged, and I know the history a little better from that point on. And we did several seasons down there. PCC was great to us. They eventually started their own theater program, so we had to look for another home.
Okay.
And that's when I think I was the president at the time, and we were looking for a building. And so I went around. I'd looked at the old Oneida theater. It's still there. It still exists up there. It's just with today's regulations, it would be a real workover to be able to get the public up into it safely. And sure. All that. In those days, we just ran them up the old freight elevator.
Okay. Yeah.
So,
why
so
not?
It all worked. And so where were we at PCC? And from there, we went and looked for buildings. And the building that we got is the one on 12th and Main. And we had leased that from the county. It's the old Science whatever church is what it was originally, and it's the big gray building down there. Mm-hmm. And so that's our home now. We ended up eventually buying it from Pueblo County, and that was in June of, 2018.
Okay.
And so we just bought it outright, which, like all buildings, it's a bit of a money pit. But we've really done a lot of updating, especially in the past couple of years. With Eric now has air conditioning.
Oh, very nice.
and it has heat, decent heat, and security cameras around it, and stuff that and the infrastructure we're working on as well. So, but now we actually have a place that's ours for the time being. Anyway, you never know how long things last, but it is our building.
And how old were you when you got involved with the Impossible Play?
I think my first tryout must have been when I was 18.
Okay,
and I didn't get in. And then somewhere around my, and you know, I kept going back, and suddenly I finally got in on I can't remember which show it was, whether it was. I can't remember which bloody show it was. Because we did a Christmas Carol thing down there that was written by Rob Bowen, who was a member, and he also teaches out. He's a professor now out at University of North Carolina at Asheville. So he's an MP that's went far and wide. What was the first one? It was the one with Robert Redford. Barefoot in the Park.
Oh, okay.
I'll get there. Yeah, Barefoot in the Park.
There you go.
And then Christmas. And the, so those were the couple of shows I think I did down there. I was engaged a lot in taking photographs back then in candids of the shows as well. So I was engaged with them as well. And then when my wife and I would have kids, we would kind of go on a hiatus of 4 or 5 years of not doing much theater, and then we'd get back into it again. And so then when I really re-engaged was down at PCC.
Oh, okay.
And did a lot of shows down there.
All right. And you did one, was it last year? It was Calendar Girls?
Yeah, we did Calendar Girls. And that was a fantastic show.
Tell us the story behind Calendar Girls.
The Calendar Girls, for those of you who don't know it, and I may be screwing it up a little bit, so bear with me, is that these British ladies from, I think it was along the northern border of around Scotland, they belonged to the WPA, and they were all this group of friends, and the WPA was kind of a community church group sort of thing, if you will, in our world. And so they did nice stuff around the community of this little rural community. And one of the ladies, Annie, her husband passes away from cancer. It's a part of the play and also a part of the movie. And she's had to sit through all the process, the horrible process that you do when you're watching a loved one go through that. And one of the big pains in the butts that they talked about during the storyline and in the truth was that the couches that were in the radiation therapy and the chemotherapy rooms at the time were uncomfortable in this particular hospital they were in. So they decide to use their community group to create a calendar, because that's what they do. They every year they come out with this stupid little calendar, that's their words, not necessarily mine, of these beautiful rural British pictures. And so they find out that they only made about £15 out of the whole thing the year before, and they want to buy a new settee for this hospital or this cancer ward, a new couch. And so they know they ain't going to make it on £15. So they decide to figure out how they can do it. And one of the characters, one of the wilder ones, starts asking around, asks the mail people, well, you know, what calendars go through the post office? You have to remember that this was back in the day. This isn't digital stuff now.
Right.
And they find out from the post people that biker calendars and kind of nudie calendars are the thing. So,
sure.
So these middle-aged ladies get together and they decide they're going to do one of these calendars. And you have to remember they're all church ladies, so there's all that's going on. And so they do this. They go ahead and make this calendar, and the calendar goes what we would call now viral. And it's reached as far as Pueblo. Like I told you earlier, I've seen the original calendar with the original ladies.
Nice. Wow.
And they then go on, and the viralness of the whole thing gets into Chris's, the character's head, and she begins to want to take it even further, so that they're doing advertising for soap, because now they've become kind of a national phenomenon.
Hmm.
And that's way too far. That wasn't what the group wanted. They just wanted to do this thing for memory of John, Annie's husband. And so it kind of breaks friendships up in the storyline, and then they all finally come together towards the end of the show, as things are. And because Annie and Chris, the two closest ones, have broken apart. And Chris comes in and hands Annie a check, which is £50,000, I think, is what it was. And the ladies were able to actually not only buy the settee, but donate the rest of the money for that particular cancer ward. And that's what they eventually did. So it's a wonderful play, and the ladies that were in it in our production were fantastic. They did a really good job.
Oh, terrific. Who were do you remember the ladies that were in this production?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, there was a whole bunch. It was a pretty large cast. Let's see if I can get them all. There was my Chris Stewart. There was, Laura Jelinski, Loretta Bailey, I'm going to blow this. Meg Versteg. Heidi Rufner was in it. Amber Shipley. Sorry, Amber. There's the primary six.
Well, that's terrific. And then you also had a local calendar.
Yeah, we did. We did a local calendar with all the ladies and plus some. Brandy Peterson made the calendar or had shot the calendar. She was also my assistant director. And so we did our own calendar, of which I think many Puebloans actually have hanging up. It was a fundraiser that we did for the Impossible Players.
And just to clarify, it's not a topless, naked calendar. It's all done very tastefully.
No, it is done very tastefully. Yeah. There are no mustaches drawn or anything like that on any of the ladies yet. And no, it is all very tasteful, by the way. Yes, very much so.
I'm very good. And so when, like with the season, have you already selected your next productions for later in 2023?
We have, but we haven't announced it yet.
Okay. So do you... How does that process work without, leaking any of the titles? Tell me how you decide what to choose.
The process can come several different ways. We have play reading committees in which we actually sit down and a group of us just read plays, and then we bring it to the committee as far as whether we think it might fit on any number of levels. It might be a great play, but it might be far too difficult for us to do technically. It could be a cool technical, you're kind of balancing your, what the work is against what we're capable of doing. People that may want to direct a show, may come in and hand us a script and say, I'll direct this show if it passes through the system. And so we may do it that way as well. So it's pretty wide open. We're always listening for suggestions. Our drift since 2020 has been mostly light shows, although we still mix in the more intense ones like Pillow Man. We've got a new kind of dark time. Dark time in theater means the time between shows. It's when we're not doing anything live on stage.
Okay.
Or we're kind of maybe in rehearsal production rather than produce actually having audience there. We're doing a new series called the Ghostlight series, and that's purposefully much more intense. It just started this year, so like this year's show was Pillow Man. It also was all cast with youth actually, and it's an adult show. And again, it was a dystopian. Highly intense, hard language, totalitarian social commentary of what could happen to us when those types kind of get a hold of things. And it was wonderful to see my kids coming out of NextGen, which is a program I have for high school students. Get up there, and some of these kids you or people who look at theater may have seen around town in musicals. Taylor Filler, who was the lead in Music Man this year at the District 60 production of that show, and so it's good to see new blood coming in through the youth end of
Sure.
And because most of us are getting a little long in the tooth, unfortunately, is that happens. Suddenly, we went from being the young Turks, and we look in the mirror one day, and we go, "Oh crap, we're not the young Turks anymore. We're the old traditionalists."
Right. There you go. I can play that guy's dad now.
Yeah. When the hell did that happen?
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And so you have a youth focus that you're doing as well.
I do, and I said I do because the MPs support it. I came to them, I guess, 7-8 years ago. There was a lot of with the idea for next gen players, and my thought was there's always if there isn't a lot of non-musical theater in the summertime. It seems like the district and some of the other groups, they lean towards the musicals for kids. And yet there are a number of kids that just aren't glad handers and dancers and that sort of stuff and might want something a little deeper or just straight theater. No music. That's what I mean by straight. And so I created this. And sure enough, I started getting – really good actors. And the focus initially, or the angle initially was really kind of more towards the youth end with a little bit of an edge. I believe one of the first plays we did was about two androids that were trying to fit into human high school, of all things. Oh. And it was a little bit about what happens with bullying with new people is what the point was, almost a Star Trek sort of look at the anger of bullying. And from there, I think we did some Vampire High or something silly like that. And then I noticed that they had bit really hard on stuff with much more relevance to their time. And so I started looking for scripts like that. And we would do one acts, a comedy. We would do two one acts for a show. And one would be a comedy and then an intermission. And then we might have a serious one about bullying. We had one about lockdown where the kids were actually locked in a classroom during an active shooter event. We don't know whether it's an active shooter event. The audience doesn't. And nor does the script lead you that way. That's what was cool about the script. You don't know what's really happening, but it's about the anxiety that can happen in there. And the script ends with the door rattling, and they don't know whether there's an active shooter or not. And so it leaves the audience kind of hanging as well.
Wow.
So a lot of intensity there. From Fire Exit, which was a show about a fire that was set. It was done in monologues. And so the show is the students, or the actors rather, were coming down in monologues telling their story about this school fire that happened that claimed one student. And the ending of that, you find out that one of the students had lit her homework, her for college stuff. On fire in a sink in this kind of abandoned bathroom. And this kid was actually in this abandoned bathroom, and it lit the whole thing on fire and killed this kid. The interesting part of that was that when we do script studies, when we're doing this, and so we had all the kids together, and I had one adult in that show who played the principal. And so I asked the kids, I said, well, who's at fault here? We know who set the fire. Now, what's your take on this? To a man, they all turned and they pointed at the principal, because in the storyline, the principal didn't call the fire department soon enough because this kid had been setting off all the fire alarms all the time. And so the kid that got killed was actually one of ones. Was at somewhat at fault because he was doing all these false alarms. And it broke that poor actress's heart that all the kids, these kids all just turned on her and said, it's her fault.
Oh, no.
It really touched her at any rate. So it's interesting to always get their take. And I think that's part of the magic of Next Gen. We went on then to do in 2020, I was so frustrated with what was going on then. And as I'm sure a lot of folks were, we had a window of time there when my Next Gen program hits, which is right after 4th of July, that the lockdown at the time was eased here in Pueblo. Hmm. And so we could get people together again. They were allowing us to do that with great distance. So we went ahead with Letters from the Quarantine, and I didn't have a script. I didn't get a script. Like Cortez, I burnt my ships, and I was going to go down this path, and the path was that the kids were going to write the show of what they were feeling over the past several months of this lockdown.
Oh, very good.
Now, what was so cool about that and gives me tingles now was that for 3 weeks, I had around 12 kids come in, and they would break up wherever they were going. I got a couple other authors writers here in town, and we were going to be their mentors to help write them. We were bored. I mean, they just came in and they would scatter. And for 2 hours, they would work on their monologues and more monologues and more monologues and more monologues. And then after those 3 weeks, sure enough, they had them. We culled through them. There's an interesting side story here. I'll tell you on this one in a minute. And then we, over the following 3 weeks, because our rehearsal time's usually about 6 weeks, we got it on stage up to deck, and it was well received. An interesting side on that was that one of our group, Johnny Lucero, does some writing and writer's blogs. that sort of stuff. And he was in contact with a bunch of people around the world through his writing stuff. And he'd reached out to them and said, you know, because he'd asked me, can we get some other monologues from other people? And sure enough, we ended up with three monologues, one from Japan, My Father's Sword, which was a beautiful piece about a woman whose family was historically attached to making samurai swords of all things. And this gentleman had died, her dad had died because of COVID. And so she had written about how she was going to keep her father's forge, her father's sword, whatever, still going. It's a beautiful piece.
Oh, very nice.
Another one was, and I think this one was from the States, was about a text conversation of all things. It was the only piece that was actually multiple players about a kid who had passed away, and yet the other kid was upset and texting that, you haven't talked to me. Why haven't you talked to me? You're a bad person. Why haven't you talked to me? And the mother is actually receiving all these texts as they get worse and worse and worse. And finally, the mother breaks in with, you know, your friend's passed away. My son has passed away, or my daughter, I can't remember. And so that one was a tearjerker. So we had these three from outside of Pueblo, and then the rest were written by students here in Pueblo. It was a beautiful piece.
Oh, I'll bet it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting.
From there, the following year was a piece that I had written, which then Mindful Awareness had picked up here in town. That was with Kennedy Pugh's folks, which was called Never Have I Ever. And it was about child sexual abuse here in Pueblo. And it can fit anywhere. And so, and that piece was, again, I believe, well received by the audiences. And it was indictful. And the kids bit on that sucker because they felt it. And I used the kids to help me with their lingo.
Sure.
to make sure that the script was true to form, you know.
Right. What does that word mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So they would help me out with that stuff. So it's been a wonderful run. Then we did Crazy Town last year. I'm having to rebuild the program again because you get people that – they graduate, they go off to school, and then you get younger ones that are coming in. And so so anybody out there that's, especially the youth, if you're in that range between graduating middle school to you know, your first year or so in college, come down to the Impossible Players or check out our site there, and you'll see when our tryouts are for that. That'll be in the summer around 4th of July.
And what website would they check out?
They can check out the Impossible Players website. It's that simple. Or they can check out our Facebook page, which is also the Impossible Players.
Okay. ImpossiblePlayers.com?
.com, yes. Yeah.
Very good.
I believe it's .com, yeah.
And, I was looking at some of the past productions, and one of them caught my eye. Harvey, that's a classic with the big rabbit, of course.
Yeah, I was in that one.
Were you really?
Went down at PCC. I've got funny stories on that one, too.
And how do you, I guess it's all volunteers that build the sets and
yes.
and try and make it as realistic as possible?
Absolutely. Yeah. We do as best we can with that. It's always volunteers. Nobody gets paid. Everybody gets paid the same. Nothing.
Right.
We're actors. We just get up and do it, whatever, for nothing. Tends to be the case. Volunteers all around, all the time. Yeah, 24/7.
And if we have an aspiring actor or actress listening, would they just go to the website, or is there a number that they can call and say,
yeah, hey, they can call 719-564-6969 to get in contact with us.
And the productions that are coming later in 2023, you'll be announcing those, and hopefully you'll let us know, and we'll have you back in on the morning show.
Yeah.
And on the Kicks Country morning show.
Would love that.
Talk about what's coming
up.
Yeah,
that would be great. That would be great. I'd appreciate that.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. And a shout out for my business, which is Ovation, which is an actor's school. And if you're interested in acting, look me up on Ovation, or you can call me at 719-821-1746. That's my number and Ovation's number. If you're really interested in an organic form of learning this art, very one-on-one-ish, small scenes, not large groups, learning the art as it's used now, and the old way of doing it, the way I was originally taught. I've had really great success in getting kids into to good schools, including ADA, Juilliard, Adams State here in town. I've helped them. I've helped them. Let me repeat that. I'm not the one that got them there. They're the ones that did the work, and I can't be more proud of that work.
Oh, terrific. I'm going to ask you a couple of just kind of insightful personal questions, sure. Just kind of this or that questions, and I'm going to end a little bit toward entertainment a little bit, since you're an actor.
Yeah.
Dog or cat?
Both.
Both. I think you're the first person who's ever said that in the 4 years I've been doing
well,
the podcast.
Good.
You have both, huh?
I got both, yes. Yeah, I like right. Both.
Very good. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Trek.
Okay. Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings?
Oh, Harry Potter.
Okay. And what comes on your perfect pizza?
My perfect pizza? Everything, including anchovies. No pineapple.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm with you there. That's fruit. All right.
That's fruit.
Very good. Darren, it's been great talking with you. I've been speaking with Darren Stewart with the Impossible Players and with Ovation. It's great to have you here and really appreciate your time.
I thank you very much. This has been great. Appreciate it, Dave.
Absolutely. I'm Dave Moore. That's Pueblo's Podcast. Be proud, Pueblo.